Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you.
There was a time when the Bahamas had a thriving agriculture industry, when farmers from the Family Islands would travel to New Providence in South Florida to export produce such as pineapples, tomatoes, and watermelon. My grandfather from Cat Island was one such farmer who would sail from Cat Island to South Florida with his and other farmers' produce to take to market. Then the contract happened, stealing scores of Bahamian men from our shores to South Florida to build their citrus industry, and in the process, decimating our agriculture sector here at home. Welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Nikki Bowe, and today we are going to be talking about agriculture in the Bahamas, the future of agriculture, the role of BAMSI, and what we as Bahamians can do to feed ourselves on a micro and macro level. My guest today is Senator the Honorable Dr. Irecia Hepburn Forbes, and we're going to be talking about agriculture. Dr. Forbes, welcome to University Drive.
A very pleasant welcome, and thank you for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to discuss something that I am so passionate about, which is agriculture, marine, and environmental sustainability in our country.
So, Dr. Hepburn, I'm going to ask you to I'm going to define food security by the United Nations, and then we're going to talk about all things related to food. Food security speaks to the availability of food in a country and the ability of individuals within that country to access, afford, and source adequate foodstuff, according to the United Nations Committee on World Food Security. Food security is defined as meaning that all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food that meets their food preferences and dietary needs for an active and healthy life. The availability of food, irrespective of class, gender, or region, is another element of food security. When we talk about food security here in our country, where are we as it relates to food security, Dr. Hepburn?
Well, if you listened to the definition given by our host, you would see that we have at least two of those tenants. We normally have the ability of access, and that's through goods coming in or from our local farmers. The issue of affordability and nutritious foods, however, has been something that we've kind of not been able to accomplish as well as we would like. One of those things that we constantly consider is how can you do some form of income substitution for things that you purchase? And one of the ways that you could do that is starting your own backyard farm. This is important because now you may not have to purchase tomatoes yourself, purchase lettuce. When you look at the price of romaine, comparatively speaking in stores, I think it was as high as $8 or $10 when you could grow romaine pretty easily. And even if you purchase from the stores by cutting off the majority of the leaves and just leaving the bottom part of it and putting it in soil and starting to regrow some romaine for yourself.
Wow, that's interesting. So Dr. Hepburn, we got ahead of ourselves. I wanted you to introduce yourself because you're no stranger to University Drive. There are people that know you and then there are people that don't know you. So for the benefit of our listening audience, introduce yourself and tell us how, as a female, you got involved in agriculture to the level of being a PhD in agriculture.
Well, again, as was stated, my name is Dr. Irecia Hepburn Forbes. I got into agriculture. I'll start by saying that my mommy's only stipulation when I graduated from high school was that I had to become a doctor. which she didn't know. I think she assumed I was going to follow her in the medical field. But I had heard the Minister of Agriculture at that time, who is now the former Prime Minister of our country, Perry Gladstone Christie, speak. And he was talking about the need for agriculture and why we needed more persons to join the field. And from that day, I determined that I was going to be an agriculturalist. With that, my father really helped me. We planted a lot of stuff. And even when we used to go to Cat Island in the summers, we would kill sheep and goats there. So agriculture, I'd say, has been a part of my roots from the inception. Like, I think everybody has a family island story of planting and helping assisting on a farm. So really, I decided that I wanted to learn a lot more about the theoretical side of it and how I could actually come back and assist my country. Because at that time, I think our imports was about 85%. We've increased in importation. And a part of that was, you know, different priorities of the government shifting focus. I think what was paramount was the creation of BAMSI, Bahamas Agriculture Marine Science Institute, where I currently sit as president.
Thank you, Dr. Hepburn, for that.
So I want to get into it. And I'm reading the book by Godfrey Enius, Road to Bahamaland, and in the acknowledgments, he references you for your contribution. And it says, the future of food production in the Bahamas. The Bahamas is a food deficit country. This translates into the fact that the Bahamas depends on others to feed its population of 400,000 residents and about 6 million tourists who visit our archipelago annually. The National Food Bill of the Bahamas has been escalating to the point where imported food is costing the country in excess of $1.5 billion annually. This is not a healthy scenario for any sovereign state for several reasons. Explain to us, and he says it indicates a lack of food and nutrition security policy. Because of the high cost of imported food, nutritious food is unaffordable. The Bahamas is spending a huge amount of dollars on imported food. Why? For the average person, explain why this is not just a health risk, but this could also almost be a national security risk when we consider where we are in terms of food production and how reliant we are on other countries and imported foods to sustain our population.
So I'm going to walk you back a little bit, Ms. Bethel. I will start by thanking Ms. Enius. I actually had the book in my hand right before we started this show. One of the most important things I think people need to realize is, if you could just go back to September 11th, if you were in this country, I want people to think about that. Or go back to just Hurricane Dorian, for persons who were in islands that did not have access to receiving goods. If there are any external shocks, in that instance, we had September 11th, and right before that, don't forget, we had the straw market fire. If you recall, I think we did not have food on the shelves for a few days because there was no traffic coming in and out of the country. So think about that. If something happens somewhere else that prevents travel, and now we're at the state, we had COVID, and thankfully they didn't shut down the shipping routes. But can you imagine what would have happened if, when we had lockdowns, that meant total lockdown of even shipping? We would not have had access to any food except local. And so this is why I think Mr. Enius is expressing explicitly that we have to increase our domestic production. Now, I will tell you where me and several agriculturalists part, and a part of this may be the economist in me, is that I do think that we need to meet domestic demand to a certain extent, because there will always be trade. Trade is not going to go anywhere with us. I'm not an advocate of flooding fields for us to grow rice. And we know rice is an intricate part of what our culture has become when it comes to food. But I do believe that we should not be importing onions, something that we could grow easily, okra, coconuts, I mean, sweet peppers, things that really, with a little bit of patience and not even that much time, well, except of course for the longer growing crops, that we could actually grow. So that's one. I know you had a few other questions in that statement. If you could just remind me of the next one so I could answer.
Yes, also, like, why is it important for us? Like, what does it mean for us, even from a national security standpoint? And
Okay.
I think you mentioned, you know, what it means when we looked at port 9/11 and the Strom Occupy and Dorian. But do you think the average Bahamian really understands the severity of the state that we could be in should something drastic, or should our shipping ports be out of operation?
I definitely think people understand it a lot more, because if you have lived through those three events and then COVID, which literally just happened, where people had to stand on long lines for food, and that was because what we normally have is the access through affordability, being able, having that purchasing power, what the FAA talks about. And that purchasing power was taken away from them. So you could see how if any leg of the triangle falls, you are in a precarious situation. Persons understand that all of our food, the majority of our food, is shipped into the country. And if for any reason a shipping port is cut off, you are now limited to what you could actually source. I think most people get that. We've had the unfortunate reality of living through instances where, you know, you could question those types of things. And sadly, persons on family islands, I think, get it even more severely, because they understand that if the mail boat doesn't come in, so there might be accessibility here in New Providence, but if there's something happens to their mail boat, there are things that they can't source. So this is a reality I think Bahamians have now come to grips with. What can we do to shift that? Because we will not be able to produce everything that we may want, but we do have the ability to produce things that we would need to survive. You know, you have tubers, we have the sweet potato, cassava, even starting to think if people would eat more tubers related, like dashing, those types of things, where you would be able to get nutritious products. I know the Office of the Spouse is having a breadfruit project that she's working on, and that's because they are so nutritious and can provide a stable, steady meal for persons. Now, again, let's go back to nutrition. We talked about romaine, the cost being maybe even $10, $15. The reality is, and I've done research with Dr. Allison Carpin on this for a while in the Bahamas, it's cheaper for a family, especially a family of four, to order a packet of noodles, what has no nutritional value for you to eat, than to try and get something healthy. And that is something that we've definitely been working on. We try to have affordable prices, not only at BAMSI, again, which is the Bahamas Agriculture Marine Science Institute, but also at BAIC, Bahamas Agriculture Industrial Corporation. So persons, and you have farmers directly selling to you and the farmers market. And that is so persons can have access to healthier, fresh fruits and vegetables. And even you may not understand, you're not only getting access to healthier, fresh fruits and vegetables, but you also now are limiting your climate footprint, because you know where this food is coming from, direct access. You could discuss, did the farmer actually use pesticides when growing these things? You could ask these questions, because don't forget, when you're talking about health, we have high instances of things like cancer, as in particularly breast cancer, other diseases, you know, that persons are plagued with. And a lot of that probably could be linked back to our nutritional intake.
You said a lot just now. Anyways, what I want to touch on, you spoke about the cost of romaine lettuce. I went into the grocery store the other day. My two-year-old loves watermelon. And I went to buy a watermelon and it was like $12. And I was like, I can't. And you know, there are times when you pay $8.99 for a watermelon. There are times when you can get a watermelon for like $6.99. So when I saw $12.99, I was like, oh no, he's not going to be eating watermelon anytime soon. And my mom said to me, why don't you go to BAIC, or why don't you go to BAMSI and see if they have any locally grown? My mom is a strong proponent of locally grown produce. But beyond that, you spoke about a family of four being able to feed themselves noodles at a far cheaper rate. And I think in our society at this point, we now eat more for taste and flavor than we do for nutrition. How do we begin to change and shift the mindset of people to begin eating for nutrition and for them to recognize, and you mentioned cancer, particularly breast cancer and illnesses that are food, that could be food related and lifestyle related. How do we get our population to have that mindset shift where we are eating for nutrition and making the sacrifices where necessary to pick those healthier options?
Well, I will say part of that, and there's something that we even doing at BAMSI, of course, is education. At BAMSI, we are about to put out a cookbook for Christmas. And what we're trying to focus on is, you know, how to utilize or try some of the fruits and vegetables that you may not have eaten before or considered as something that you would want before, where we have the nutritional value in it. And then, you know, as you go along, you may want to incorporate other things. We are still working on getting recipes from persons. So we want people to try different stuff, because sometimes you just don't eat something because you've never had it fixed or prepared in a way that you like. The reality is, though, it will take a paradigm shift. I'll say, let me just speak for my family alone. My daddy loves coleslaw, but you know, is only so much mayonnaise you're supposed to have and all that. And so we started doing like a sauteed cabbage. And even though he eats it, you still have to give him coleslaw sometimes, but it's an easier substitute, more nutritious. You know, you have to start substituting and making small steps. I'll even speak for myself. Everybody knows I love gombe soda. So I substitute, like I might could have a gombe once a week. But what I substitute is I try to drink natural coconut water, because I'll be honest and say I don't like the ones in the can. But you have to start making substitutions. And the only way people will do that is if we try, you know, with tastings, educating them on certain things, showing them the link, because it is very hard to change somebody's eating patterns, what they've had for more than a decade. And I say that, that's why we try to go into primary schools very early, introduce to them why they need to ensure that they have their 4 to 6 servings of fruits and vegetables, and, you know, tell them about different fruits and vegetables that they may not have heard of. I make a good squash casserole, because right out of the squash in the yard by my dad and them, and he'd always be like, oh, I don't want no squash. Nobody's eat that, right? He wanted to till it back in the soil. I was like, no, we trust me. I'm going to try a recipe and let's see if you like it. Now, I will say it. This the crust was probably not ideally healthy, but it got him to eating the squash. And he ate the majority of my casserole. So I think it's experimenting with different fruits and vegetables. Like I just sat on a panel 2 days ago where the lady was like, she doesn't eat eggplant. And I was like, really? I love eggplant. And then I realized it might've been the way it was prepared.
You're absolutely right about that. It is a matter of experimenting, figuring out which what you like, and being creative with recipes and different ingredients and that kind of stuff. We were talking about eating for nutrition, but another thing I know that people talk about is eating what is in season. Why is that important? And are we able to derive all of the nutrition that we need from our native fruits and vegetables?
Well, as I'm not a nutritionist, I will not speak to if we are able to derive all of our nutrition from all our fruits and native fruits and vegetables. But I don't see why we wouldn't be for a majority, because if you eat in season, like your mommy would have told you, you know, we have a surplus in August, September, you would have been having watermelons. And at BAMSI, we were selling watermelons from $4. I think our highest price was $6. So during that time, sometimes there may be, you know, an influx because they have a glut in the market. But that is small because, again, people constantly want to consume. And when we have our visitors come to our shore, all of that gets absorbed very quickly, especially as we are starting to see record numbers again of tourists. But if you eat in season, you normally get a more affordable fruit. And you know that this fruit is in force ripe at any point in time to come for you. It doesn't have the long travel time. But of course, if depends on what new technologies, maybe we need to start encouraging farmers to grow things that persons would like year round.
You just said something that hit a nerve with me because I know there are times when I go into the grocery store and all the bananas are green or all the bananas are like overripe. Like there's very rarely a time when you could get that perfectly ripe banana. But I thought about something the other day and I was like, okay, if this food is traveling from God knows where, most of the fruits that we get and even the vegetables that we get in the grocery store, depending on what it is, cannot be ripe at the time of picking. And I think I recall that pretty much a plant, a fruit or vegetable gets most of its nutrition when it is able to ripe on the tree or the vine or whatever, where it grows from, its growth source. Is it then that the whole process of having to harvest and transport diminishes the amount, the nutritional value of some of these things that we are consuming when we buy them from the grocery store?
Well, I, again, not being a nutritionist, but I would say intuitively, yes. Because, of course, when you're talking about picking earlier dates, sometimes they have to add different preservatives and sprays on it because they have to pack it for transport. And unfortunately, a lot of people eat with their eyes first. And so you have to make sure your fruit and vegetable look a certain way. And because of that, you know, persons may not pick a local one, which might be in the food store, because we have not processed it as much as, you know, the bigger competitors.
That's interesting. So, Dr. Hepburn, we're going to take our first break here on University Drive. When we come back, I want to talk about BAMSI and some of the programs and how do we encourage Bahamians, particularly young people and students, to get into the agriculture sector. We take our first break here on University Drive. Don't you touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Technology is great, but nothing beats a good book. Buy a book this Christmas and increase your child's literacy skills, vocabulary, creativity, and imagination as the words on the pages come to life. Shop in store on University Drive or online. We also ship to the Family Islands.
Feed our minds! Feed the future!
Welcome back to University Drive. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Senator, the Honorable Dr. Eresia Hepburn Forbes, and we're talking about agriculture in the Bahamas and the future of agriculture. Dr. Hepburn Forbes, I now want to talk about BAMSI and the role of BAMSI in our country. And there are people that are pro-BAMSI, anti-BAMSI. But I want you to enlighten people. What is BAMSI and the role of BAMSI in our country and particularly the agricultural and marine sector of our country?
Okay, thank you again. Well, BAMSI is extremely important for our country because this organization provides education for persons who are interested in the agricultural field at a tertiary level. The reality is, you want students to have a more hands-on experience. And by having an operational farm unit and active marine science department, we have the ability to increase agriculturalists in our country. I'll be honest and say I wish that there was a BAMSI around while I was studying at my tertiary level, because this affords persons the opportunities to learn at in so many different levels. Hopefully, right now, we're currently only at our associates, but we have partnered with several organizations. So when you transition from BAMSI, you have afforded the opportunity for international completion of your degree, locally and internationally, because we have several MOUs in place and ones that we're working on currently. If you do not want to take time to do a full degree, or may not have the time to do a full degree, or just have an interest in a particular area, we offer several certificate courses. And this is important because earlier in the segment, you had heard me discussing about creating your own backyard farm. And while this may be intuitive for some people just naturally have a green thumb. By taking our backyard farming course, this affords you the opportunity to grow better. Our theme at BAMSI is grow with us, and it's best at BAMSI. And with both of those themes, we want to encourage you to continue growing in your own yard. We've ensured that persons working in BAMSI also take those courses. I will say my manager in academic affairs now has a thriving yard. Just yesterday, she brought everybody planting. From learning a lot of new things from the courses. So we encourage people to sign up. Short certificate courses could run anywhere from 4 weeks to, I think we go as high as maybe 8 weeks to 10 weeks, depending on the course. So, and most of our certificate courses are on the virtual platform. So you have an opportunity to learn a lot more about how you, like we spoke earlier, can help fight some of the agricultural costs that we're playing with right now. We also have, I still have a little bit more. We also have some free courses that we will be offering coming up this spring, just to give persons a taste of what's going on at BAMSI. And we want to educate some persons that might not be financially able at this point in time to take a full course. So we will have short 1-2 day courses about a myriad of topics, which could just assist you in moving forward. Things as simple as how to compost for your garden, to install in drip irrigation, all the way up to we are looking at artificial insemination.
It's interesting that you should talk about artificial insemination. I want to talk about the whole backyard farming. What are some of the crops, whether fruit or vegetable, that is more conducive to our climate, our soil type? Because listen, farming ain't easy. Farming is a science, right? Agriculture is a science. And people think, oh, you could just plant something and it's going to spring up. No. Teach us, walk us through the steps in the process for somebody that may not have time to do a short course at BAMSI, but they really want to get their backyard farm going. What are some tips that you could give somebody in order to get it started?
So I will say right away that some plants, of course, don't just spring up. But I encourage people to plant what it would be like native to your island or place. If you put down okra seeds, unless you have no thumb, 9 times out of 10, those seeds sprout. And that has been my experience. Like, time is something a little bit more difficult for some people. But things like okra, pigeon peas, even planting coconuts, all of those things will help with you purchasing these items and things that you could use. I can tell you, I planted some okra on the side by my daddy house before. And if you have 6 okra, he's ready to make soup. So these things that you would not have to purchase and are easily planted, you just want to get started with planting some of these items. And I will say that the Ministry of Agriculture has made it extremely affordable. You could get a small backyard farming kit for $3. So that's really affordable. They give you the seedling trays, they give you some seeds, they give you the ProMix, which would be the medium which you could grow with, and that will get you on your way. Some people want to start with more fancier crops, but I say start with some of those basic ones and you would be able to see the results. And then you could start taking short, like I said, we have short courses, and if you want to ask and back and forth questions, you could take courses with us, free courses online. We've partnered with Convoy of Hope, that's also doing some free courses in the country. So there are opportunities if you really want to know about agriculture, marine, or environmental sustainability for you to come out and find out. I will say that.
You talked about planting coconut. How does one plant coconut? I
Well,
never, like, it's a foreign concept to me. Walk us through that step.
I will say the coconut trees that I've planted came from my backyard. So as we let some fall and dry out, and then the coconut actually springs from what would be the coconut, and then I just plant those nuts right in the yard. It's really not a hard concept. And the same thing, okra for some little round seeds. You just place them in the soil. What I encourage people to do is lightly dig up some of your soil. I normally place my thumb in it, and from where my fingernail tip is to the first line on my thumb, I put my seed in there, cover back up the soil, water it. And then for the most part, nature has done the rest with my okra, to be honest. Because I would love to say that I have an opportunity every day to check on my plants, but I'm so grateful and thankful for my husband because he normally does. But that's one of the ones that have really springed up pretty easily.
So, Dr. Hepburn, we talk about VAMC, and here at University of the Bahamas, we have the Small Island Sustainability Program as well, something you're very familiar with. How do we encourage young people to get into the agriculture sector when we see, this is we have the millennials, and this is kind of like the get rich instant gratification generation where they want things that, they don't have to work as hard necessarily, but they want the money. And in many instances, the agriculture sector isn't that way because you have to plant and then you have to harvest. So it's about seasons and it's about periods of time. How do we encourage our young people to find interest and passion in something that is very important and to revolutionize the agriculture industry so that we are not so reliant on imported food and goods?
Okay, so I will go back to what I've originally stated before. It comes with educating and information. I'll tell you that we go out and speak to several schools here at BAMSI and inform students. And we actually have had a lot of student interest. We had a summer camp here in New Providence, and we normally have one in Andrews as well, where you find students are already interested in the agricultural and marine sector for sure. And while it may not be automatically dependent, a quick return depending, it's actually not bad. One of the students was like, "Oh, if I do the certificate course, I could grow these vegetables and then I could sell them to people in my community." And I was like, "Yeah, because you do have some 30-day, 60-day plants that you could put down in the ground and have a quick turnaround if you have the skill set and a green thumb." First, there are several schools in the country that have agricultural programs there, and those students understand the value. Like right now, the cost of eggs, I think, in Super Value might be $8, where you have local farmers and a lot of the schools selling eggs for like $5. So again, it's knowing how you could get a quick turnaround from your produce, but it's really educated and showcasing to students like. When we went to Bluefield Farms and we thanked them and on one of our field trips, students saw a fully aquaponic system and was like, "Wow, how can we replicate that?" And so we have an aquaponic certificate course, something that students could actually take. And this allows them to determine, is BAMSI a place that I really want to go? Because we could learn these different technologies on a wider scale and then maybe start their own business. I will say my Senate colleague laughed at me. He was like, "I think y'all putting something in the Kool-Aid there." What my godson came to me and he was like, "Oh, I need to have a talk with you." And he thought he was coming to him to tell him, oh, he wanted to move from BAMSI. What he was coming to tell him is he needed him to help invest in his project because he wants to start his own farm because he knows and understands that it could be a lucrative business. And I think what we're doing, especially, I want to give out a shout out to Samantha Roll at SBDC because they are really assisting with Access Accelerator, allowing persons to get access to funding to start agricultural businesses. And that's extremely important. Once you start having persons get into business, we start doing a lot more research in the business, which we do at BAMSI, so we could try and help you and say, this is what we've found successful growing. These are some of the things that we think might work for your farm and you come to us with questions. We've been working with agencies like CARDI, the Scaribbean Agricultural Research Development Institute, and IECA, and that's the International Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. So again, just educating, making people aware, even now to drone technology. I was in the paper earlier this year talking about how we could utilize drone technology in agriculture. When students understand smart and climate change agriculture that we're doing, I think we have more persons interested.
You mentioned an important word, climate change, and how that is impacting not just local agriculture and fisheries, but globally. How do we, again, knowing what's happening, knowing the risk of hurricanes and other natural disasters decimating farms or that kind of thing, how do we put safeguards in place to ensure that the risk or the loss is minimized if, God forbid, we should have some natural disaster?
Oh, so, and this is more ensuring that we do things. Like I was just on a call with a person from Blue Project. We need to ensure that we be doing restoration with our mangroves. We need to ensure that even though we're not the major contributors, we're still doing things to mitigate, and we have to adapt. That's the reality. Though we had the fortunate opportunity for maybe 1 or 2 days where the earth stood still. There was no processing or no pollutants in the air, but we are now back to business as usual. And with business as usual, until we start utilizing globally some more of the climate change fighting strategies, we'd be again in a very difficult state. But here in the Bahamas, I tell people we have to do conservation at all levels. I mean, all that, turning off the light when we're not using it, you know, not running excess water, because we will be greatly affected. And we have to, you know, plant more trees, do things. We have natural carbon sinks, but we have to ensure that we create more opportunities for persons to understand how climate change directly affects us.
I think we're beginning to see it. And I think, unfortunately, Dorian was a wake-up call for many people in terms of the drastic impact climate change is having. And for us on this side of the world, it's hurricanes. In other parts of the world, it may be melting glaciers, or, you know, they talk about rising sea levels. And so it's all around us, and we have to be able to adapt, like you said. When we talk about adapting, how are Bahamians adapting to these uncertain circumstances in terms of food provisions? And what, I know there are local farmers markets. Let me shift my question. Do you think we as Bahamians are taking advantage of the local farmers and the farmers market so that we can eat locally and we can continue to fuel the local farming industry?
I definitely think that persons are buying local. And I will say this as someone that sometimes sits outside our distribution center. We normally have several peak sales, but what I do want us to do as a country is start ensuring that we have access at more locations, because we have the Gladstone Road Farmers Market, but again, that's Gladstone Road. We are on East Bay Street, and BAIC is on Soldier Road. So unless you go to a schools, and schools do encourage you to go to them for their operational hours, shout out to HO Nash, CV Bethel, GHS. They normally post their hours where you could go and utilize, pick up whatever you would need from them. They advertise pretty often. But most farmers, you have to go to their farm, and probably having more mobile markets or pop-up markets. I know Shavara with Chickchani Farms try to do a lot more pop-up markets in different areas, and that'll provide you with access to local goods. But maybe consistency, having an app when you know pop-up markets is going to happen, those type of things would be beneficial for consumers, because I understand, so we have to remember that agriculture is also a business. And so we have to make sure that we are accessing our customers where they are. And I think one thing we also need to do is ensure that local produce, when it is in food store or regular shops, are labeled local so people can make the determination if they want to purchase locally.
When we talk about purchasing locally, I remember back in the day, there used to be the, I forgot the produce exchange, like where you could go Potter's Key Dock. My mommy used to take me there, right? Potter's Key Dock, and you go to the produce exchange and you're able to get goods from different islands. Is that something that's still in existence, or has it kind of phased out with the decline of agriculture in some of these islands?
Well, there's still produce exchanges, and I know the one in Nassau is currently being revamped to bring it up to date. That's currently under BAIC. So there are opportunities. Now, I don't know the full times that the produce exchange in Nassau is open, because like I said, I knew it was under renovation the last time I checked, but we still have farmers that bring in goods. I think BAIC has moved, the one on the dock that is, BAIC has moved their full produce exchange, like I said, to their office at Soldier Road. So that's where goods from farmers would be coming in. But the one on the dock, I know, was supposed to be renovated. I don't know when that will actually happen, because like I said, it comes under BAIC's purview. And right now they're functioning with the produce exchange at Soldier Road.
Iricia, based on your experience, pardon me, Dr. Hepburn Forbes, my apologies. Based on your experience, what are some of the biggest myths and misconceptions and misunderstandings as it relates to agriculture and food security?
I think some of the biggest misconceptions I would say that persons normally have is that the food may not taste as good if it's local. I've heard some people say that. And of course, if you actually try local produce, you would understand that that is definitely not the case. I've also heard persons say that it's more expensive. And when you actually compare prices, especially at this point in time, you find that most farmers are very competitive. What most people don't understand, however, is that bigger countries subsidize the agricultural sector a lot more than we do in the Bahamas. And so at times, some things may seem a little bit pricier, but the reality is most local produce is at least, if not as affordable, cheaper a lot of times than foreign produce. I mean, when you talk about mass and economies of scale, of course, there's where the difference is. But when you go and speak to a farmer and you don't have that local markup for the most part for a third party, you're able to get a pretty reasonable price for most of your stuff. There'll always be one or two outliers, but shopping direct from the farmer is normally a very affordable option.
For most of this conversation, we really focused on crops, fruits and vegetables, but there's another dimension and aspect of agriculture, and that's livestock. Where are we in our country as it relates to livestock? I remember as a child, Eleuthera had cows, had a thriving farming industry. Where are we as it relates to producing? And I know Long Island has, you know, sheep and goat. Where are we with livestock in the whole agricultural context?
It's so funny that you said this, because a few minutes ago, I was talking to one of the teachers because they haven't slaughtered right now. And I was hoping to catch that, but I committed to this first. But again, 2 days ago, I was in Grand Bahama helping Berkshire Farms slaughter one of their pigs. I think we are now seeing again a resurgence of animal husbandry in our country. I know at Bamsey, we're waiting to move our pigs there. We got a donation and they're currently being housed at the Gladstone Road Agricultural Center, and we're moving them to Andras shortly. We have a good stock of sheep and goat. We have persons like Mr. Edrin Simonet, who are one of the largest goat and sheep farmers in our country. So we have persons there, and I think getting more persons interested in it by putting on, again, courses and educating people on the benefits of rearing your own sheep or goat or pigs, because the demand is there. We don't have enough supply for the demand. And I'm talking just fresh pork, this before we even start processing. The demand is definitely there for the slaughtering of these animals.
You said a phrase that's very interesting, and I hope people picked it up. We don't have enough supply for the demand.
Correct.
How then do we increase that supply? How do we get people that may not have ever been exposed? Like, I know my sister doesn't eat. I have a sister who doesn't eat lamb to this day, because she could still, in her mind, she could still smell the scent of that lamb when my grandfather slaughtered that in Cat Island. She don't eat that, right? But how do we get people that have never been exposed to animal husbandry interested? You spoke about education, but I think education without exposure still creates a gap.
Well, I mean, we try in different ways. If you follow us on TikTok, Bamzi Academic Affairs, we showcase a wide variety of things for persons to follow. See, the goal of having, the joy, apologies, of having such a technological age is that once persons have a concept, like right after persons listen to this talk radio talk show, right? They have the opportunity to go not only to Bamzi Academic Affairs TikTok and look at some of the videos or things that we may have been doing, but they also can go on YouTube and look up things that they may be interested in. Those kind of things kind of show people, so they have an idea. And then they determine, okay, let me find out a little bit more. Research has become so much easier now with the dawn of social media. Like, one of the reasons I wanted to go to the slaughter today is so I could have shown the gentleman who I was helping in Grand Bahama, you know, the difference of ways that you slaughter the same type of animal. So I think just by utilizing social media to talk more about agriculture, like we have already determined each week we're going to pick a theme or agricultural component to discuss on our TikTok, so people could just know a little bit more. And what we realize is we have to meet people where they are, and social media platforms seem to be where people are.
You're absolutely right. The young and old alike. So you spoke about slaughter. So is slaughter something that happens on a weekly basis or bi-weekly?
Well, it's as needed. So we only have one abattoir currently in the country, and that's on Farrington Road. Hopefully we'll start to get a few more abattoirs built. And once that happens in different family islands, we'll be able to showcase different techniques from different family islands, but it only happens based on need. So of course the vets have to be involved, the animals have to be in holding for a time before, then there's the slaughter, then there's the post-mortem to make sure the meat is healthy, all that stuff, because of course you have to also ensure that health and safety of where the food is coming from is important. And so you need to have environmental health or vet inspect the meat at all times.
You just opened my eyes. Like, I thought you just kill the animal and bam, you take it. But there's a process involved where you said there's a vet that has to inspect it. There's a period of time to ensure that the meat is safe. So I can't go to slot and say, hey, give me a piece of that meat for me to take home.
No, because normally what happens is a farmer has sent their meat there. And so they don't sell from there. You know, they hold the pigs before slaughter. That's the first thing. They hold the pigs in the instance of pig or animal before slaughter. That's one. And then they're slaughtering. And like I said, then they inspected me to make sure that there was nothing wrong again. So it gives you an opportunity and steps, because you want traceability if anything was to ever happen. Because the country does not have fully yet diagnostic capacity for ensuring certain things are there. So you have to do different types of inspection.
Wow, wow, wow. That was eye-opening. I'm sure we could have more conversations about that. Well, Dr. Hepburn Forbes, we've come to the end of our conversation. The time went by rather quickly, but I enjoyed having you on. And before we wrap up, I just want you to give a word of encouragement to young people who are considering agriculture and even the not so young who may want to start backyard farms or even farming on a large scale. What bit of advice and encouragement would you give them?
First, I would say that it's never too late. I encourage you to look us up on bamsi.edu online. We are here to serve you. We want you to know that it's best at BAMSI, and we have certificate courses regardless of age. So you could come in and find out about what we're working on. And by having it virtually, that also helps our persons who may have some form of disability. We're trying to be inclusive to all segments of the population because everybody needs to eat. So I encourage you to find out. You could, if you don't have internet access, you could call us at 397-6500. Remember, it's best at BAMSI.
Well, Dr. Hepburn Forbes, thank you so much. And before you go, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you were recognized a few years ago as an outstanding alum of the University of the Bahamas. COB is where you would have gotten your foundation. And so congratulations on that and all the things that you're doing, and continue to be the advocate for agriculture in our country.
I will say, since you mentioned it, I think I'm the only person, my daddy got the Flamingo Award and I got the Trailblazer Award. So I think we're the only family where both persons got the award from COB, because he used to work there as well. So COB is near and dear to all of our hearts. You be now.
Indeed it is. Thank you so much. And thank you to my listening audience for joining us today. For more information and to listen to more shows on University Drive, be sure to visit our website at www.ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and TikTok. Like she said, social media is the place. And join us next week, same time, same radio station, for another exciting edition of University Drive. I'm your host, Nikki Bow. Thank you so much. Enjoy the remainder of your day.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations and the Communications and Creative Arts Academic Unit at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.